A steady stream of retirements means the federal government has to hire 100,000 people a year just to jog in place. Now, if the president's budget request for 2017 prevails, a 1.5% jump in the federal workforce would mean another 30 or 35,000 new people. Tim McManus is Vice President of Education and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. He joins me now on how to keep your agency's staff from overheating. And Tim, I think the last time we spoke about this topic, we talked about the HR staff and what they would need to do. But it's much more than the HR staff, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is, Tom. And I think, you know, whether or not the president's budget actually goes through or not, we have to start looking at the way that we're bringing talent in and hanging on to talent very differently. And I think oftentimes what we do when we're in the agency is we hit the button that says that's HR's role. And it's really not HR's role. HR is the enabler for us to do all those things. But ultimately, as program managers, as leaders, as managers, as supervisors, that's actually where the bulk of this ought to fall. And frankly, those folks ought to be the ones who are clamoring to make sure that they're involved throughout the entirety of the process so that they both get the right people on the front end, but also they're keeping the right people going forward.
Because workforce planning is one of the biggest responsibilities that program managers have, and very often we find they are not that great at it.
Well, workforce planning is the key to this, which is, you know, again, yes, there may be another 35, 37,000 positions that are filled. But again, we know there's 100 plus thousand jobs that are going to be filled primarily just due to the retirements. As we know who's retirement eligible, what are we doing right now? Again, not on the HR front, but what are our program managers doing right now to say, Tom may be retiring. He's retirement eligible. He may be retiring. He's given me some signs that he's retiring. How am I going to fill his position? What does that mean? Am I promoting from within? Am I moving somebody up? If I do that, what's the domino effect? Who do I need to bring in? How do I bring them in? What am I looking for? Those are things that we actually have to be thinking about as program managers, not just once a year or semi-annually or anything like that, Tom. The whole makeup and composition of your workforce is something that you ought to be coming into the office thinking about every single day, and you ought to be thinking about it every day when you leave. It's actually interesting. I was on a panel at a conference yesterday, and it was primarily with hiring managers and program managers. I'd call them program managers, not so much hiring managers. And at the start of the presentation or the panel, we asked a question, how many of you are involved in any way, shape, or form in hiring? And I was shocked to actually see the respondents in real time using their clickers. 75% of them said that they were not, 75% of them said they were not involved. And basically, I'm doing a little bit like I did yesterday here, which is if you're one of those hiring managers that are in that 75% saying you're not involved, shame on you, because you have to be involved.
That's almost the equivalent of program managers saying they don't have anything to do with acquisition. That's the contracting officer. And yet they're really the ones, that is the program people, are the ones that set the requirements in the first place.
They set the requirements in the first place. They're the ones that are actually going to have to, you know, ultimately be working with the contractor to make sure that the contractor is delivering on goods and services in a way that's actually conducive to driving that program forward. So the same is true. You know, to some extent, Tom, that's a great analogy. I hate to say that people are simply an acquisition, but they may simply be just that, an acquisition. And in fact, I would argue that they're the greatest asset or resource that actually an agency is bringing in. And because of that, you really, really need to make sure that you're involved in the process.
We're speaking with Tim McManus, Vice President for Operations, Education, and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. Something you implied, but maybe we can elaborate on, is that workforce planning is not just how do you replace a person when they leave, but maybe thinking about, well, here's somebody leaving. Here's a chance to redo this to better match the mission that we've got now versus 2, 3, 5 years ago.
Yeah, here's a chance to rethink the way that we do business. Here's a chance to rethink the talent that I really need. Workforce planning, you have to be concerned about, you know, how you're developing your talent as they go as well. Again, it's not just about getting people in the door. I think that's oftentimes the way that we look at it, which is, oh, we think that Tom's leaving. How are we going to replace Tom? But we don't actually look at the rest of the spectrum, which is how are we developing the rest of the staff so that as other people like Tom leave, there are other people who are already here ready for that challenge that could move into your position. So again, training and development is a big piece of this, and we need to actually spend more time on that. And again, frequently, Tom, what we turn to on the training and development side as well, it's a cost to send people to training. Our budgets are being cut. We actually don't have the ability to do that. There's a lot of things that you can do that are low cost and don't require a ton of manpower or a ton of dollars being expended.
Are there good techniques or tools for workforce planning other than pencil, paper, and scratching your head and looking out over the sea of cubicles?
So, you know, I think ultimately there are a lot of different tools out there, and I think the best thing, as you suggested, is you have to have kind of ongoing conversations about what your changing needs are and what the skills are. And I think also ultimately, whether it's pencil and paper, or you've got a spreadsheet or some type of IT platform to be able to look at all this, it really is looking both at individual positions, but it's looking at not individual positions in a silo. You've got to actually look at that within the context of the entire unit or the entire mission or focus of the agency, and see how can we basically move pieces. It really is almost like playing chess a little bit, which is how am I moving pieces around the chessboard in order to get to where I need to be.
And what are some good ways that program managers and even the people above them can justify these types of needs, especially if there's an increase in the number of people you might need, or people at a higher level, salary level or GS level, to replace people that are leaving? How do you justify that up the chain?
So I think I think the rationale for spending more, Tom, as you're talking to folks up the chain, is really if you are going to deliver on the mission, you actually need the right people in the right place. And if you don't currently have that, you've got to make the case for how your plan of action is going forward. If there are people heading out the door and you've got to invest more in training and development, you got to make the case for where those skills are lacking. Again, that's where some of the paper and pencil or the Excel spreadsheet or what have you come into play, which is you actually have to have some handle on what are the skills that your current workforce has and then where those gaps are. And that gap analysis is actually key, not only to determining what you need, but for making the case on the type of people you need or the type of training that you need to provide to upscale the folks that are already on board.